Do you have an iPhone?
The Committee on Education will come to order. Welcome back from the weekend. We used to have sunshine. It's now gone. If you have a cell phone on, please turn it off. And I will open a public hearing on House Bill, on Senate Bill 113A.
Senate Bill 113A exempts specified schools or separately accredited school campuses from statutes pertaining to the authority to grant degrees. And we have a gentleman here who will tell you exactly what that means.
Thank you. Please. And colleagues, Kevin is ill today, and so Keeley is ably standing in to help us move along appropriately. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Alan Contreras from the Office of Degree Authorization. I have asked Dr. Gary Andine from the Independent Colleges Association to join me here because we have worked on this project together for some time. I need to give a very, very brief bit of history on why this is here and why it looks the way it does. About 2 years ago, there was a federal court decision in California that concluded that a state government could not treat different kinds of nonprofit regionally accredited universities in different ways because the regional accreditors were too similar to each other in what they did. Pardon me, that the state could not make a rational distinction among them, provided that they were nonprofit and regionally accredited. Oregon law at this time doesn't work quite that way. So what we did was work with the Department of Justice and also with the Independent Colleges Association to come up with language that we felt would address the known legal issues and also would maintain the state's legitimate oversight activities for for-profit institutions and for institutions that do not have regional accreditation. So what this bill does is it sort of reconfigures the eligibility for exemption from the statute that I enforce in order to make a slight change in the group of schools that we work with on a regular basis in what you might call a licensing capacity. The net effect of this is that there are three or four schools that are currently under my jurisdiction at ODA that will go away. They will become exempted under the current statute because they are nonprofits and they are regionally accredited. One example of that is Emporia State University out of Kansas, which operates a librarianship program that is actually located at Portland State because Oregon has no freestanding library school. I've had to review that program every 3 years for 10 years. There's never been so much as a comma out of place. It's absolutely a top-end institution. It's an opportunity for the state to get out of the business of regulating something that doesn't need to be regulated.
Madam Chair, excuse me. Alan, what was the name of that institution again?
Emporia State University.
Emporia?
In Kansas. It's a state institution. There's not really anything quite like it in Oregon. It's kind of like Western, but bigger. So that's just an example of who we're trying to exempt now. There's also one school that was formerly an ODA school that is going to be coming back to us under the wording of this statute. That is the Art Institute of Portland, which is a for-profit institution. I have discussed this bill with the president of the Art Institute of Portland. We've worked together for many years. He has no quarrel with this bill, and even the fact that he will have to pay me a fee again is something that he finds he can live with. We've always had a very good relationship with that school. So the bottom line here is we're making a reconfiguration of which schools are under ODA jurisdiction, so they are for-profits and those that lack regional accreditation. And I think I'll stop there for now. And do you want to handle questions when Gary's done?
Yes, we'll hear from both of you first, please. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Gary Andine. I'm the president of the Oregon Independent Colleges Association. The simple thing to say is a good bill should pass. This is an opportunity to at least leave on the record for you that Oregon has the preeminent Office of Degree Authorization in the country, if not the world. You have reason to be very proud of this office for protecting the status of degrees and the quality of higher education in the state. We do not have any diploma mills in Oregon, thanks to Alan and his office over many years, and I hope we never do. So I'll stop there, too, and take questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you both very much. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Thatcher.
Just clarifying that once again,
for-profit schools and schools not regionally accredited? Like, do they have to fit both those categories, or is one or the other to be back under the jurisdiction of the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, it's either of those categories.
Okay, thank you.
There are some that are for-profit but do have regional accreditation, which we are retaining. There are a very small number that are nonprofit and lack regional accreditation that would be also picked up. There's a lot of overlap in those two categories, but it's not 100% overlap.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any
further questions?
Yeah, Madam Chair. So, Alan, you used the example of the Art Institute, and they're currently accredited through the Northwest Regional Accrediting Agency, right?
Madam Chair, Representative Dembro, that is correct, but they are a for-profit institution. And we have our sense is that we ought to retain an oversight capability for all for-profit institutions, even though some of them, the Art Institute of Portland is an excellent institution. It doesn't create problems, but almost all the issues that we have to deal with come out of for-profits of one kind or another.
Right. Follow-up. But it will continue to be accredited. Its individual courses and programs through the Northwest Regional. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Dembro, that is correct.
Thank you.
Well, that assuming that they continue to apply to do so, that's their decision to make, not ours, but it won't be affected by the bill.
Thank you. Representative Pump.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. I'm just curious, the fees you talk about now, could you give an example, and are the fees a graduated scale according to the size of the institution, or everybody just pays a certain fee, and that's how come you guys are so good?
Madam Chair, Representative Comp, the fees are set by you folks. The legislature created a fee structure in 2005. In effect, you adopted the fee structure that the commission had in place at that time and built onto it an option for us to have an annual increase based on the Portland CPI if it was necessary to do so. The fees range from I'm talking about full-scale degree programs on the ground in Oregon. The fees range from about $2,800 up to around $5,000 for each program review. It's related less to the size of the school than it is to the complexity of the review. For example, for a doctoral program in a field where we don't have in-house expertise, we have occasionally had to hire an outside consultant, and the fee structure allows us to do that.
Thank you. Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you both very much. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 113, and I'm opening a work session on Senate Bill 113. Colleagues, we have all of the paperwork necessary to move this bill today. President Dembro?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 113A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dembro moves Senate Bill 113A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the bill will go to the floor. Anybody want to carry this one? Anybody hasn't carried anything in a while? Representative Comp.
I'll carry it. I'll be happy to carry it.
Thank you. All right. Close the work session on Senate Bill 113, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 114.
This bill prohibits a person who receives a degree from a diploma mill from using a disclaimer to claim or represent that that person does possess an academic degree. It declares an emergency effective on passage, and again, Office of Degree Authorization.
Welcome back.
Madam Chair, Alan Contreras again, speaking this time on Senate Bill 114A. This is our little fix-it bill this session. The Department of Justice had a couple of concerns they asked us to fix here. The first you'll see on lines 5 and 6 of the bill. There's a language to be removed which in effect said that until we had caught up with somebody and our office specifically told them that a fake degree was no good, there was no action that could be taken by any state agency. We had a case last year in which Department of Justice wanted to move forward on a case coming out of another agency
but it also involved a fake degree case. They could not move on that until we gave the person notice, and they didn't want to give the person notice because they had some confidential investigations going on. So they asked that this language be taken out of there. It doesn't do us any harm to do that. Our regulations currently allow somebody 30 days once we contact them to agree to cease using a fake degree. We intend to keep that in the regulations because our intent really isn't to punish people, it's to get fake credentials off the market. So that our intent is to leave that in rule, but we'd like that language to go away so that the confidential investigations that involve multiple agencies don't get hung up on that particular technical issue. In addition, the bill on lines 21, 22, et cetera, there's a minor concern that the disclaimer language that is currently in law might possibly be used by somebody who has a fake degree when they should not be able to do that. It has to do with how the definitions connect with each other. And our intent here is to make sure that somebody who has an unaccredited degree that they just bought off the Internet is not able to claim that they can use it with the statutory disclaimer. The disclaimer of accreditation is intended to be used for schools that do not have accreditation but are legitimate schools that are operating legally under the laws of the state of Oregon or whatever state they happen to be in. In that case, because every school, when it's a startup, is not accredited. You have to operate for a period before you can become accredited, and we allow the use of those degrees with a disclaimer. We don't want people to buy them off the Internet to be able to use the disclaimer, and that is the purpose of the other language in this bill.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions, Representative Dimbrough?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the disclaimer section that you just described, Alan, it uses the term diploma mill. Is that defined anywhere?
Madam Chair, Representative Dimbrough, it is defined earlier in this same statute. That language doesn't appear with the language in front of you, but it is defined in ORS. If I can remember, basically what it is to be a diploma mill, you have to be issuing degrees without the legal authority to do so from the jurisdiction that you are in. In the U.S., you can only issue a degree if you are authorized to do so by Congress, by a state government, or by a recognized sovereign Indian tribe. Those are the only three ways you can get that. If you don't have that authority and you are issuing degrees anyway, you are a diploma mill. In addition, if you do have state approval or some other approval, but there is a court decision stating that you have sold degrees or falsely issued degrees for some reason, the statute allows those entities to be labeled diploma mills also. I'm sorry I don't have that language in front of me.
No, that's great.
That's basically how it works.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further questions? This is a great bill. We had a case, I don't know if Representative Springer remembers this, down in Benton County recently with a candidate actually running for sheriff that had a summa cum laude degree, which cost, I think, an extra $250 to have the honors attached to it. And what was fascinating was after it was found out, just the defense of the work that he had gone to graduate with those honors. So I'm glad this is getting taken
care of. Madam Chair, I remember that case.
Any further discussion? No, thank you very much. I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 114A. Open a work session on Senate Bill 114A.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 114A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dimbrough moves Senate Bill 114A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, motion passes and the bill will go to the floor. Who would like to carry this one? Representative Springer will carry the bill. Thank you very much, Representative Springer. Close the work session on Senate Bill 114A and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 44. And colleagues, we're going to do the public hearing today. This bill is not yet ready to work, so we'll do the hearing, and it will come back for moving at a later point. Keely.
This bill extends the applicability of the law that allows school districts and public charter schools to charge tuition for and offer supplemental kindergarten through 2011 and 2012. It also establishes a full-day kindergarten implementation committee to aid and advise the legislature, school districts, and public charter schools on providing full-day kindergarten by the 2012-2013 school year. And authorizes the superintendent of public instruction to determine the committee membership, including legislators, as non-voting members, and charges that committee with providing resources on capital needs, enrollment trends, funding requirements, and best practices for providing full-day kindergarten. Requires the committee to submit a report and provide proposed legislation.
Thank you very much. Morgan Allen, Andy Miller, and Beth Ann Darby, please. This feels a little bit like Benton County Day, because this bill also had its origins in a complaint that originated in the Corvallis School District about full-day kindergarten.
We're not going to speak about that.
It's on the SMS.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, for the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education. And I think I probably speak for all of the education folks in the room today that we wish we were here with a bill that had full funding for full-day kindergarten and changed the school funding formula and made sure that every kid in Oregon had equal access to full-day kindergarten. But I think the current economic realities this session have overwhelmed that goal. And so I think we're all here in support of Senate Bill 44, which is probably the best piece of legislation that we could put forward at this time, and requires that the superintendent put together a work group to figure out how to make full-day kindergarten a reality in Oregon by the 2012-2013 school year. And Senator Haas helped shepherd this package together in the Senate, so we appreciate his work on that. So I'll keep my comments very brief and would be happy to answer any questions, but I think everyone on this committee knows that full-day kindergarten is, there's clear research that when you have full-day kindergarten, it's one of the most critical pieces to helping low-income, minority, and other disadvantaged students overcome what everyone calls the achievement gap. And when you can help these kids early on in life, you know, the longer you wait or the later they enroll in school, the wider that gap becomes, and you're playing this never-ending game of catch-up with students who start behind. And when we get kids enrolled in full-day kindergarten, as a matter of fact, just this past Friday, I know some people here were there, but we had our annual Closing the Achievement Gap celebration up in Portland for schools, and one of the common themes we see in a lot of schools who have high minority, high socioeconomic disadvantaged, high pockets of poverty, one of the common themes in the elementary schools is that they have full-day kindergarten programs, and they help those students achieve and overcome that gap and those disadvantages. So we also know that things like, there's plenty of research that shows that full-day kindergarten helps more costly remediation down the line for all students, not just those students that might start further academically behind others. And the reality is that in Oregon, we've sort of had, for lack of a better term, I guess, a grassroots explosion in the number of students in full-day kindergarten. Right now, we have almost every day 14,000 Oregon students. About, almost one in every three kids in kindergarten in Oregon right now is in a full-day program in over 100 different school districts in our state right now. And you have a real combination of resources. Yes, there are some school districts that charge tuition for some students, but you really have a combination of districts using Title I resources, the School Improvement Fund. Last session, one of the many options was full-day kindergarten. A lot of school districts took advantage of that. And frankly, some school districts have just made it a priority. I think, a good example is like the David Douglas School District. If you hear Senator Monroe talk about what their school district has done and made tough choices in order to implement full-day kindergarten throughout their school. So that's where the first half of the bill is really, it puts together a work group to figure out how to implement full-day kindergarten by 2012-13. The work group is charged with bringing back a proposal by, I believe it's October 1st, 2010, so that the 2011 legislature can debate that and work that over during the next session. Hopefully, by that time, our economy will have recovered enough that we can actually look at providing funding for that and making the necessary changes in the state school fund so that all districts have that opportunity. The second part of the bill, which is a critical portion, if you remember during the February special session in 2010, is a result of the Corvallis School District case that Representative Gelser referenced. The department got an opinion from the Attorney General that it was not allowable for school districts to be charging tuition for their full-day kindergarten programs, which had been a longstanding practice by many school districts. And frankly, I think everyone at the school district level and everyone at the department just assumed that was okay because you can charge tuition, for students that enroll outside your district and other things are allowable. So everyone, I think, just sort of assumed that was okay. And we had a family come forward and challenge that policy of the Corvallis School District, and it turns out they were right. So during February 2010, we put together, I think, what most of us think is really a necessary temporary fix to allow those school districts that are still charging tuition to be able to charge tuition for their full-day programs. I think everyone on the committee is aware that the current state school funding formula, which, by the way, was set back in 1973 for kindergarten, is that you get a half a weight for your kindergarten program, and you're required to offer a half-day program. And as a school district, you can choose to offer a full-day kindergarten program, but the state provides no extra funding through the state school fund. Again, for the school improvement fund last session, for the first time, some districts had access to some extra money. So the good news is the number of districts and the number of students being charged tuition, I believe there's about 15 or 16 districts that still charge some of their students tuition. It's less than 10% of the kids enrolled in full-day kindergarten are paying tuition, at least by the numbers that we have gotten from voluntary surveys from our school districts. So that's the second part of that. It extends that allowance for districts to charge tuition for their kindergarten programs out a couple extra school years while we hope our economy recovers, and we hope that we can come back in 2011 and put together a package to make kindergarten a reality by the 2012-13 school year. So the bill did pass the Senate unanimously, and we hope this committee can move the bill forward and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. So I'll be available to answer any questions, and I've got all kinds of data and statistics if anyone has any questions. So thank you for the time.
Thank you. Next, please.
Vice Chair Springer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andy Miller. I'm Senior Policy Analyst for Oregon Business Association. I won't bore you reading through this testimony, and Morgan stole about half of my comments anyway. But I'm really glad to see that we at least have something here. We understand the economic situation doesn't make it possible to really get down and make a plan for this now, immediately. But my education committee was talking about our priorities for the year, and they brought forward they wanted to have full-day kindergarten. And I said, oh, for heaven's sakes, in this economy, why would you want to ask for that? And they said, if you don't ask, you don't get. So we're going to continue to ask until it is a reality. It saves so much money down the line, as you have seen from prison statistics, and it increases graduation rates. And one of the curious things, in one of my former lives, I was an inner-city special ed teacher, and I would like to know if those children, and Head Start was just beginning then, and if those children had a Head Start, how many fewer there would have been in my classroom, and how much we would have saved in the formula. So I have asked the Department of Ed upon occasion, and I will probably continue to ask, to see if they can give us that data to show that keeping those kids out of special ed is going to pay back that 0.5 easily and allow us to find a formula that works. So I really appreciate your considering this and moving this forward, and we're asking, so hopefully we'll get someday. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Gelser and members of the committee, my name is Beth Ann Darby with the Oregon Education Association, and on behalf of the 48,000 members of the OEA, we are here to strongly support full-day kindergarten. The issue has always been about the money and the funding, and we think that Senate Bill 44A provides a very comprehensive way of moving the ball forward on this issue, helping us to put together a plan around the policy questions that still are out there and that there's some questions around, and most importantly ensures that funding is available in every school district across the state. So we think that this is a very good step to keeping our eye on this very important goal for the state of Oregon around public education. And I'm not going to read my testimony, but you have some of our policy statements that our members have voted upon that that lets you know why they think it's so important. It's included in my testimony. Unfortunately, we were not able to bring any of our members here today because they are teaching, and they were not able to take time off given all the things that are happening in our state with weather and budget and swine flu. So it's more important for them to be at school. But they care passionately around this issue, and if you wanted, I'm sure we could find a time to bring a few of our members in to talk to you, our kindergarten teachers, in to talk to you about the differences that they've experienced in both half-day classrooms and full-day classrooms. It is quite remarkable. And with that, Chair Gelser, may I take just 30 seconds of personal privilege? We have, sorry, all of you in your boxes, you're going to get one email for all of you email-only offices. OEA's Working Wonders Contest just culminated, and we have 6 finalists. It's sort of our Oregon Idol of educators, and these are videos that have been put together by OEA members and families and the PTA and just everybody gets involved, and you win money. The subject of the video receives a third of the prize. The creators of the video receives a third of the prize, and the school receives a third of the prize. First prize is worth $6,000. Second prize is $3,000, and then third prize is $1,500. There were 32 entries. We narrowed it down to 6, and people have until the end of the month to log on, vote for your favorite video, and to really hear some amazing stories about what our members are doing across the state. So we hope that you will not only vote yourself, but you will encourage your constituents as well, and you'll receive a bit of an email blast later this afternoon so that you can forward it on. We hope you will. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Morgan, I thought last February we set up the infrastructure for a task force to start looking at a lot of the questions, the brick-and-mortar questions, the teacher, the pursuing full-day kindergarten. Did I dream that, or?
Chair Gelser and Representative Huffman, I think you didn't dream it. But I would answer the question this way, is that a lot of the things that the task force is officially charged with doing and bringing back a formal recommendation to the legislature were discussed during the February special session. They were never codified in an official task force, whether a legislative, Department of Ed, governor-type task force. I think many of the answers, I guess I would say it this way, is I think everyone in education knows what the challenges are. And what we need to do is get everyone in a room together and come up with an official recommendation to the legislature so that they can take action. I think the sort of hanging issues continue to be funding and how we get funding into the state school fund or the school improvement fund, or whether we have a separate account for full-day kindergarten. We've talked about, do you phase the weight in a little bit so, everybody gets it, you phase it in, 0.75 to 1, something like that. The other issue, I think the other outstanding issue continues to be that we do hear from some school districts that infrastructure is a concern. If they did have to switch over to full-day kindergarten, how would they, balance that in their facilities? That's probably the other major question that still we need to get a little better handle on. And I think it's possible that the work group could bring forward some recommendations for, perhaps as part of that package for making full-day kindergarten a reality in Oregon. I would not be surprised if we came with some suggestions for capital improvements that might be needed to make that transition. We've collected that type of data for physical education, for example, in the past. We could also collect that for full-day kindergarten. But I think it continues to be many of the same questions that continue to go unanswered, I think.
Follow up, Representative Huffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Morgan, what does this do in creating a task force that we didn't do last year?
Well, I think, again, Chair Gelser and Representative Huffman, for the first time it creates an official reporting mechanism that will give a recommendation to the legislature. The task force or commission, or I can't remember what it's called specifically in the bill, it's required that if you look on, let's see here, I'm going to actually grab the bill, but If you look, the full-day kindergarten implementation committee shall submit a report and provide proposed legislation to the interim legislative committees on education by October 1st, 2010. So I think that's the big difference, is not only will this group answer some of the policy questions, but they are charged with drafting specific legislation, and I think that will force everyone to sort of get down at the table, roll up their sleeves, and sort of stop asking the same questions over and over again and perhaps come to some solutions for this body.
So in the SMS part of it, it says the superintendent shall determine the committee membership. So we didn't establish any kind of a committee or task force last year at all. So the
Chair Gelser and Representative Huffman, no. Thank you.
Do you have any further questions, Representative Van Orman?
Well, I think that in Hood River, we actually have full-day kindergarten in the whole system. And then Sandy is undertaking a couple of, well, I don't know how many additional full-day kindergarten classes they're going to have, but they're also going to be doing it. And my understanding is that one of the reasons that we can do it in Hood River is because of our local option levy, which is supporting the school budget. Does that seem...
Chair Gelser and Representative Van Orman, I think I'm sort of glancing at my cheat sheet, but you know, of the roughly 14,000 kids in full-day kindergarten programs, some of the more common ways that school districts use it, you know, and these are just rough numbers, you know, 2,000 kids are paid for through school improvement fund only, you know, roughly 2,000 kids, they mix their state school fund and school improvement fund. About 2,000 sound like what you're describing in Hood River, where they use district dollars, local option dollars. You know, several thousand, they use Title I federal monies for low-income students. Parent tuition, again, you know, probably about 1,200 to 1,500 kids out there paying tuition. And then, you know, some districts, frankly, just cobble it together as they can, you know, depending on, like, a large district like Portland, at their Title I schools, they use Title I money. At their higher socioeconomic schools, they might charge tuition, and I know they offer scholarships and grants for students who aren't able to afford those tuitions and use a sort of cobble together and mix. It really just depends on the district, but certainly what you described is happening with several thousand kids across the state, where the school districts have just used local option or figured out how to make it work in their budgets.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Thatcher.
Morgan, is kindergarten required right now?
Chair Gelser and Representative Thatcher, a half-day kindergarten program is required by state law. To give a very brief history, the half-weight in the state school funding formula dates back to 1973, but the kindergarten mandate did not come online until the early 80s, and it actually phased in over several years. So I think it might have been the 81 legislature that passed the requirement that all school districts have to offer a half-day program, but really not until the late 80s was every school in Oregon required to offer a half-day kindergarten program.
Okay, what I meant. Thank you. Okay, so we know that the school districts have to offer it. Are kids required to attend?
Oh, Chair Gelser and Representative Thatcher, they are not required to attend kindergarten. Oregon has, relative to other states, a high age of, I'm blanking on the term, but you don't have to be seven. Compulsory education, thank you, Beth. That's good that the OT guy can't remember that term. That should give you all hope. But in Oregon, you don't have to start attending school or register as a homeschooler until the age of seven. So the most common age for kindergarten is five, sometimes six. So really, technically, you don't have to start going to school till you're seven in Oregon, so it's not required. But just going to say, Representative Thatcher, that most of the kindergarten-age children in Oregon do go. If you look at the enrollment numbers, it's a slight drop-off from first grade, but I would say probably 90-95% of kindergarten-age children in Oregon do attend kindergarten.
Okay, thank you for the follow-up. For those districts that do offer full-day kindergarten, do they have any, are they showing that the good results when they go into the first grade?
Absolutely.
Some studies?
Representative Gelser and Representative Thatcher, I'd be happy to get some information for you. I mean, there's plenty of media articles, but I think, you know, just a good example, every year the department and the superintendent, we honor schools that are closing the achievement gap. And I mentioned this earlier, but I could give you a whole specific list of elementary schools around the state where if you brought in teachers or principals or administrators or superintendents or school board members, that they would testify vigorously as to the change that full-day kindergarten has done for their school and their students and getting them ready. And frankly, you know, I think part of the discussion around full-day kindergarten, I think some people have concerns. Well, you know, those kids are 5 years old. They don't need to be in an academic rigorous program all day long. And I think the reality is that kindergarten is much more academic than, say, even when I was in kindergarten. You know, there was a lot of shoe tying and sandbox and Legos and things like that. And it is much different. I mean, there's more of an academic component to it. But some of the reasons that full-day kindergarten shows a lot of results for schools, especially for kids who are coming from difficult home situations or may not have been exposed to reading at a young age, is that they learn how to come and socialize. They learn sort of the process of going to school, how to line up for lunch, you know, how to listen to a teacher, how to, you know, sit down and sort of take your seat and quiet down if they've never gone to Head Start or they haven't gone to preschool, and nobody at home is sort of guiding them and sort of helping them with the basics of, you know, frankly, how to behave, that full-day kindergarten can make a big difference in a lot of schools where kids don't really come prepared with sort of the basic foundations that I think everyone in here would want to give their children before they go to school. So it can be a big aid in that way. It's much like Head Start. It really helps kids that may not get a lot of help or guidance at home.
Bethann with OEA. Representative Thatcher, just another aside. A half day of kindergarten in Oregon is 2 hours and 40 minutes. It's not a true half day.
I remember.
Yeah. That's, I think, another reason why OEA members in particular get so fired up on this topic, because they do see, you know, the 2 hours and 40 minutes that we have, that's what Morgan just listed. That's an awful lot to get done in 2 hours and 40 minutes and give everybody a bathroom break and, you know, talk about what's the difference between a triangle and a square and a circle and learn some colors, and the day's done. You know, and so it makes it more critical that we do everything we can to get kids what they need. So thank you.
Representative Dimbro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Morgan, have we been hearing from any districts that as they're struggling to balance their projected budgets for next year or, you know, rethinking full-day kindergarten using district, those that are using district funds or Title I funds?
Madam Chair and Representative Dimbro, I have not heard specifically about any school district that's thinking about canceling their full-day program, but I can assure you that it's on the table for many school districts. Things that may have been unthinkable, the type of, you know, given the sort of economic realities and the type of education numbers that we're hearing, I think it's not impossible to think that some districts may have to roll back that extra funding that they're putting into their full-day kindergarten programs because they're going to not be able to pay for the basics in K-12. And it may become a luxury, frankly, for some districts. And I think all of us at this table in this room are hopeful that the legislature is going to do the right thing with K-12 funding and make sure our schools have what they need to operate. But given the current economic realities, I don't know for sure, but I would take that bet that there are some districts that are looking at rolling their full-day programs back.
And so follow up, that could either take the form of canceling them entirely or charging them under this legislation, they would be allowed to charge parents.
Chair Gelser and Representative Dimbro, I would guess that most of the districts would not want to sort of switch over to a tuition program. I mean, I think, you know, the districts that are using district funds or school improvement funds are districts that are, you know, not wealthy districts, and it would probably be an undue burden on many of those parents. I don't think you're going to see a huge expansion in tuition. As a matter of fact, if you look at the numbers, I think over the last 2 years, with the availability of school improvement fund, we've seen a contraction in the number of students being charged tuition.
Although I think that can also, while it might lead to a contraction in the number, it may lead to an increase in the tuition among those that are being paid. So I know in the Corvallis School District, where this started in this school year, in order to comply with individuals receiving free and reduced lunch not being charged any tuition at all, the tuition was raised for all other students. And then I also know that on their budget table for the next session is increasing the tuition again for students who are paying both to cover those scholarships, but knowing that there will be an additional number of scholarships needed because of the turn in the economy and increasing numbers of folks who are struggling and not able to pay, and the loss of district resources since they're doing it entirely with resources. I believe that the kindergarten tuition in Corvallis is now close to $400 a month. Representative Springer.
Wow. Thank you, Madam Chair. That's for half day?
Well, for the full, for the full day.
Full day.
Okay.
I don't want to miss this opportunity, I guess, to put in a shameless plug, quite frankly. We were talking in the Revenue Committee just last week about remote and necessary schools, and I learned in that meeting that my son's school is one of those schools. There's 9 classroom teachers in that K-8, and they offer full-day kindergarten because they see the value of it. And that school also has 1 half-time specialist in PE and nothing else, no music, no art, media assistant, and counselors, no counselor, because the value of that full day kindergarten is that high for them, and they've cobbled it together to provide that, and they don't have a community that's probably going to be able to pay for it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my comment and concern is that when we add, if this comes out and we add full day kindergarten, I can't think of anybody or any research that doesn't indicate that it can be helpful. But there are other things that oftentimes are more helpful over the long term. One of those is small class sizes in all the primary grades. And when we add another deal with our unstable funding, what happens is when there's no option except you have to offer it, is you get bigger class sizes, which hurts every one of the children. So my concern continues to be, until we figure out funding, how do we add more on, which if you have it as a requirement, all that will happen is you'll get bigger class sizes, which every study indicates, at least in the primary grades, hurts every one of the kids' future education. And I guess I just have comments.
Well, Chair Gelser and Representative Rilbin, to be perfectly honest, I think amongst the education folks in this room, we probably have different perspectives on whether it should be a mandated program or not. If, speaking for my boss, the superintendent, she does not feel it should be a mandated program. She would just say that the funding needs to be available, that if a district wants to offer, if they choose to offer full-day kindergarten, they get that full weight. I know some of my friends and colleagues have a slightly different take on that. I think what you'll find among all of us, though, is that we all think it's a good idea. It's the sort of age-old funding question, and how do we make it work so it's equitable for everybody and fair for our school districts and doesn't take away from other programs like you were just describing. I think that's what we all want, and I think that's why we need this interim group to get together and really answer those questions and bring you back some solid recommendations.
Chair Gelser and Representative Roblin, we from OEA, we also hope that this provides a opportunity to work for a more stable and adequate revenue stream for education. It is the backbone of our state. We need to have an educated workforce in order to make our economy move, and that includes a stable and adequate funding source. For OEA's perspective, we do think that it needs to be a fully funded program, and we that is part of the charge of the interim committee, is to look at that.
Please. Chair Gelser, Representative Roblin, one of the things that OBA really wants to see happen is to redirect the personal kicker into a rainy day fund. If we could do that, we would be going a long way towards stabilizing our revenue streams. And I think too often we lose sight of that, and I haven't heard a lot of talk about that. And it's really, really a priority, and I want you to think hard about that, because we gave back $1 billion a couple last year, and I have a nice flat-screen TV. I'm sure a lot of other people do, too. But how much more valuable that would be if we had a stable rainy day fund, an adequate rainy day fund. So I urge you, all of you, to think about that.
Thank you very much. Representative Parker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to point of clarification,
yes.
Representative Springer. Did I understand you to say that at least one of those schools that qualifies for remote and necessary additional funds has full day kindergarten?
If I may.
Absolutely. They have just cut so many spots, so many other areas and programs, because of the socioeconomic status of our community, and the kids that were getting bare minimum. They felt that that was the best use of the money for the kids to get them where they needed to be.
Thanks.
Representative Van Orman.
Well, I would like to follow up with what Representative Springer said, and then what Morgan had said earlier about the benefits of a full day. And I think that, and it also follows with what Andy said about special needs children, that the children today are challenged by many, many stresses in their lives. And these early years are extremely important so that we can give them some stability, some consistency, and some nurturing and environmental protection. And whatever we can do at that early age really gives them some resiliency so that they can continue through the system. And so having seen, you know, from my own experience, the changes in children and the changes, as I said, in the stressors, that I think in many ways ensuring that children are going to succeed is really one of the best investments that we can make.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If Representative Parker, actually Representative Roblin just brought up a great point to me that I hadn't thought of. That saves on busing, too. We had two or three buses going out, large buses in our area. So, anyway.
Thank you. You're welcome. Representative
Maurer. Thanks, Madam Chair. Half-day can be blocked out in different ways. My school does two full days, and Friday's a half-day. And the half-day is an absolute waste. I mean, 2 hours and 40 minutes is a joke. Yeah. But they do get value in that full day. So do you know how many schools, is there any research that looks at different ways of blocking out that time? I don't know the answer to the question.
Chair Gilson, Representative Maurer, I don't know the answer to that question. I could go back and ask some of our folks. But as you know, Oregon is an instructional hour state, not a minimum number of days. So I know some districts construct their school weeks a little bit differently to maximize things like busing, especially in larger rural districts, to, you know, have some savings on fixed costs. We have, you know, probably 30 to 40 districts that have four-day school weeks to, you know, sort of achieve those types of savings that some of the committee members were describing with busing and utilities and other things. But I could check. I don't know the answer to that question.
Thank you all very much. Dana Hipper.
Three.
And is there anyone else that would like to be heard on this bill today? Welcome.
Yeah. Thanks, Chair Galveston, members of the committee. I didn't get here in time to actually sign the paper, but I appreciate you letting me have just a second of your time. I just wanted to come up also in support of Senate Bill 44A, and just included along with my testimony a number of research citations from an organization out of Massachusetts called Early Education for All that I think responds to a lot of the discussion that this committee was having about what the benefits of full-day kindergarten are for children. And so just wanted to flag that was coming to you as well and offer Stand for Children members support of Senate Bill 44. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Dana? Thank you. So, colleagues, this bill isn't ready to work today because it currently has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on it, and we are working on figuring out whether or not it does need to go to Ways and Means or whether or not we can get that rescinded. So this will be coming back, but not today. And if there is no further discussion on this bill, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 44, and the House Committee on Education is adjourned.